Welcome to Cruise News, your daily update on everything happening at sea. Visit cruisenews.io to see today's stories and sign up for email alerts.
We are diving into quite a snapshot of the cruise industry today. It really covers the map.
Absolutely.
What we're looking at is an industry that's, well, simultaneously placing these huge billion-dollar bets on massive new infrastructure and at the same time, investing in museum-quality fine art to attract, you know, a really high-end clientele.
It's quite the contrast.
Yeah. So our deep dive today unpacks these global investments. It showcases this, frankly, unexpected cultural revolution happening on board. And maybe most importantly for you listening, it reveals the critical timing you need to lock in the deepest discounts for 2026. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
I want to start where the journey begins,
okay.
Right? The ports. The sheer scale of global investment in cruise infrastructure right now is just astonishing. You've got major regions competing to be the next big gateway.
Yeah.
Let's head to Europe first, specifically the Canary Islands, where they've just unveiled a huge new terminal. Right, Las Palmas.
Okay.
And what's fascinating here, I think, is the combination of just sheer scale and a really strong commitment to sustainable operation. We're talking about the new Las Palmas cruise port terminal at Santa Catalina Pier in Gran Canaria.
Okay.
It actually had its operational debut back on October 2nd, 2025. The Celebrity Apex was the first ship in.
And when we say new terminal, I mean, the report suggests this is really setting a new standard for the region, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, emphatically.
Right.
This facility is now the largest terminal in Europe. It spans 14,000 square meters over two floors.
Wow, 14,000 square meters. That's hard to picture.
Well, think about maybe two large European soccer pitches. That's roughly the size, all dedicated just to cruise efficiency.
Okay.
And it's equipped to handle up to four vessels at the same time with three boarding bridges. This specific project, it's actually part of a much broader 40-million-hour investment across Gran Canaria, Fuerteventura, and Lanzarote.
40 million euros. Okay. But they aren't just building big, are they? They're talking a lot about green design, sustainability. Is this, you know, a genuine commitment, or is it more just marketing talk to justify such a massive project?
Well, based on the operational details we're seeing, it really does seem genuine. Sustainability was clearly a major focus. They're talking specifically about using eco-friendly materials, energy-efficient systems, definitely solar power utilization, and significantly improved waste management.
Okay.
So yeah, this looks like it sets a serious precedent for, you know, responsible development in these high traffic ports around the world.
Right. And that momentum, it's clearly not just stuck in Europe. If we look across the Atlantic, Global Ports Holding, they're the world's dominant port operator,
that's
right?
It's them.
They're making an equally massive commitment in the Caribbean, specifically Puerto Rico.
Yes, the San Juan Cruise Port Modernization. Yeah. This is an incredible $110 million investment from Global Ports Holding. They're aiming for completion by the 2026-2027 cruise season. But the critical takeaway here isn't just the dollar amount itself, huge as it is. It's the scope. They are reconstructing the Pan American Pier's entire 1,500-foot seawall.
Wow.
And structurally improving Piers 3 and 4, specifically to support those massive icon-class ships from Royal Caribbean.
Right, supporting icon-class. That's key, isn't it? Because that immediately attracts the biggest, newest vessels in the world.
Exactly. And that signals San Juan is consciously shifting its whole model. It's moving from being just a simple port of call, where ships just visit for the day, to becoming a high-volume home port.
Ah, the home port distinction. That's crucial.
It is, because home ports generate exponentially more economic activity.
Mm-hmm.
And, maybe more importantly for the traveler, they offer much greater itinerary diversity than just transit stops.
Makes sense.
They're projecting passenger numbers to hit 1.8 million annually by 2028. And get this. If arrivals actually exceed 1.9 million, the concession agreement might even trigger the construction of two additional piers.
That's a fascinating strategic bet on growth. Okay, let's pivot globally again for a minute. If you connect Europe and the Caribbean, there's one strategic point that maybe gets overlooked sometimes, but it seemed major investment too. Casablanca Cruise Port in Morocco.
Yeah, this raises a really important question about future strategic positioning. And maybe the extension of cruise routes down into West Africa.
Interesting.
Casablanca is set to begin operations in 2026. It's under a new 15-year concession agreement, and Global Ports Holding holds 51% of that. Agence Nationale des Ports, that's ANP, they invested about 72 million in this new facility.
72 million euros. Okay. So what makes Casablanca so strategically important for global cruise traffic? Why there?
Well, technically, it features a 650-meter quay, capable of handling ships up to 350 meters long. It's pretty big ships. And it's designed to handle over 450,000 passengers a year. But critically, its location, as you said, it's ideal. Mm. It's a perfect link for transatlantic itineraries connecting Europe, the Caribbean, and crucially, West Africa. It basically functions as this vital logistical gateway, effectively linking these multi-million dollar investments we just talked about on both sides of the Atlantic.
Okay, so these massive billion-dollar ports are being built to handle the biggest, most luxurious ships ever. But what happens once you actually get inside these floating resorts?
Right.
Our next big trend shows the cruise lines are investing in cultural sophistication, I guess you'd call it, at a scale we've just never seen before. We're talking about the unexpected arrival of, like, museum-quality fine art at sea.
Yeah, it's a really remarkable trend, and it seems driven by this rising demand from passengers for more cultural enrichment. It's accelerating through these highly specialized partnerships.
Okay.
We can look at Park West Gallery first. They're the massive industry leader here, already operating on over 110 cruise ships globally.
Wow, 110 ships. So Park West seems to cover the sort of high-volume, broad-appeal side of the market. Give us an example of how they're making art accessible, you know, to maybe the average cruiser.
Okay, take Margaritaville at Sea Cruise Line, for instance. A very different vibe, right?
Right.
Park West has brought really robust programming there. They do live art options, curated exhibitions, seminars, even artist meet and greets. It's on both a Margaritaville at Sea Paradise and the newer Margaritaville at Sea Islander. Their model is really high volume education and sales. It caters to everyone from, say, the novice art enthusiast to the more seasoned collector.
And they're scaling that model up dramatically on some of the new premium ships, too, I saw.
Absolutely. With Princess Cruises, Park West just launched a stunning 3,800-square-foot gallery on board the new Star Princess. That was during its maiden voyage on October 4th, 2025.
3,800 square feet.
Yeah.
That is a huge space for an art gallery on a ship.
It really is. And it houses a collection that includes works by really renowned figures like Salvador Dali, Pablo Picasso, and contemporary stars like Peter Max, all right there on board.
Okay, I imagine you practically have to sign an NDA just to look at the Picasso or the Hockney they might have. But does the data give any hint of how common it is for travelers to actually buy this kind of museum quality art? Or is it mostly just for, you know, browsing and the spectacle of it all?
It's definitely both. But let's be clear, it's fundamentally about generating a significant new revenue stream.
Right, of course.
Which is why you see the luxury lines taking a different, maybe a much more curated approach. Look at Explorer Journeys, for instance. They partnered with Clarendon Fine Art.
Okay, so what's the differentiating factor for a luxury line like Explorer? How do they approach it?
Well, the focus there is absolutely on exclusivity and 20th century masterpieces primarily. They have dedicated galleries on Deck 5 of both Explorer I and Explorer 2. Their collection highlights works by major figures, think Picasso again, Andy Warhol, David Hockney, alongside some really hot contemporary talents like Mr. Brainwash. They're essentially selling a whole cultural experience, not just, you know, a picture to hang on the wall.
So they're positioning these galleries as a core part of their offering, not just some add-on amenity.
Precisely. They even offer something called the Art Luminary and Enrichment Program. It features highly curated seminars, expert insights. It's designed to naturally attract that affluent traveler who's looking for more than just sun and surf.
I see.
And this segmentation of cultural offerings, it really shows the industry recognizes that today's sophisticated traveler wants cultural engagement. And, well, they're unlocking potentially significant new revenue streams through those high-value art purchases.
That cultural sophistication, it's certainly attracting new demographics, it seems. But, okay, for the vast majority of people listening, the next big question is probably much more practical. How do I actually book my 2026 trip and make sure I get the best possible deal in this kind of polarizing market we're describing?
Right. This is where strategic booking really comes into play. And timing is absolutely key. Travel experts strongly recommend booking 1 to 2 years in advance.
1 to 2 years? Wow.
Yeah. And the key takeaway isn't just about securing your preferred cabin, though that's important. It's about locking in price protection.
Mm.
Many cruise lines now offer these price drop guarantees, which allow you to actually benefit if the fare goes down later.
Mm. Okay. That makes booking early less risky then.
Yeah.
And when should we actually, you know, pull the trigger if we're planning that far ahead? Are there specific calendar windows we absolutely must hit for the best value?
You really need to maximize two crucial periods.
Okay.
First is wave season. That runs generally from January through March.
Part wave season.
That's crucial for securing added perks.
Mm-hmm.
Things like onboard credits, maybe discounted dining or beverage packages. Those are the freebies that can add major value to your cruise.
Okay.
Second, for the absolute lowest base fares and usually fewer crowds, you want to target the shoulder seasons. Specifically, think mid-January to March, but before spring break hits. And then, again, mid-September to late November, making sure you avoid the major holidays like Thanksgiving.
Okay, that's really useful timing advice. And we're seeing some pretty amazing flash sales happening right now that perfectly illustrate how cruise lines are trying to pull demand forward sometimes years out. What stands out in terms of immediate value right now?
Well, Royal Caribbean is running a flash sale literally right now, October 14th through the 28th, 2025. They have prices starting as low as $289 per person for select 2026 cruises.
$289 on ships like Icon.
Yes, on ships like Icon of the Seas and Odyssey of the Seas. Now, the implication here is critical. If they're willing to lock in revenue now with these aggressive prices for 2026,
yeah,
it strongly signals they expect much higher pricing power starting in, say, 2027. So if you plan to cruise then, booking now, even for 2026, might be essential to get ahead of those expected increases.
That makes sense. Lock it in while it's low. And Margaritaville at Sea is also jumping ahead of the holiday rush to capture that really accessible end of the market too, right?
They sure are. They launched an early Black Friday sale, offering 60% off cruise fares. You can find two-night Bahamas itineraries starting at just
$199. $199 for two nights. Wow.
Yeah. Plus, they're debuting the refurbished Beachcomber after its big renovation, sailing out of Port Miami. So that adds another really accessible option for those quick weekend escapes, confirming that the budget end of the market is still intensely competitive.
Wait a second. So the cruise market is now, like, essentially divided into these two complete extremes. We have two night trips for $199 per person, and then we have this super high-end, exploratory, high-cost market. How do travelers even navigate that kind of, well, pricing schizophrenia?
That polarization is the new reality, I think. Mm-hmm. On the high-value, high-cost expedition frontier, look at Cork Expeditions. They've just opened early bookings for their Arctic 2027 and Antarctic 2027-28 seasons.
Years out.
Years out. Voyages like the Falkland Islands and South Georgia. 20-day wildlife adventure are now available. And they do offer early booking discounts, sometimes up to $2,000 in savings. But these trips are booked years in advance, precisely because of the logistical complexity and the very limited capacity.
Right. And there's also a fascinating domestic option right here in the U.S. that really highlights that niche, high-value pricing structure you're talking about.
That would be American Cruise Lines. Yeah, they're expanding their all-domestic focus. They have a new 9-day Great Lakes cruise starting in May 2026. It departs from cities like Buffalo or Syracuse.
Okay, Great Lakes cruising.
But we absolutely should note the price point here. These unique river and lake journeys, they start around $8,000 per person.
$8,000.
And they can easily exceed $14,000 for the premium packages. It just reflects the very niche, high-value nature of that small ship domestic market.
Okay, so we've covered massive global infrastructure spending, museum-quality art partnerships, fares starting under $300, all juxtaposed against $14,000 expeditions. What does this all mean for the listener? What's the big picture here?
I think the overarching takeaway for you, the traveler, is really clarity on this market segmentation. The cruise industry is simultaneously focused on, let's call it, radical accessibility through these massive deals and the mainstream lines.
Right.
And at the very same time, intense exclusivity. That's evidenced by those multi-million-dollar port upgrades we talked about and these onboard luxury art experiences. They are deliberately widening the offering at both ends of the spectrum.
So appealing to a much wider range of travelers than ever before.
Exactly. It's creating a world where, theoretically, you could buy a Picasso while sailing into a billion-dollar port, and you book the whole thing with a flash sale 2 years out. It's quite something.
The sheer scale of the industry's ambition has really never been clearer, has it?
Indeed. And I think the real provocative question for the future is, will the industry successfully manage to market these two radically different cruise experiences? You know, the $199 budget break versus the $14,000 expedition, maybe even to the same traveler at different points in their life. That convergence point or divergence will be absolutely fascinating to watch.
A lot to think about there. Thanks for listening to Cruise News. Visit cruisenews.io to catch up on the latest updates and sign up for free email alerts.